Good morning. Lindsey Graham's funeral draws world leaders to Washington for tributes and some diplomacy. Reuters breaks down President Trump's busy day. The Washington Post looks at how enthusiasm for the president might be waning among GOP voters and why America's biggest cities are losing their kids.
So the number of children living in big cities is declining pretty dramatically. The fertility rate or the birth rate is down actually more in cities than in other places.
It's Wednesday, July 29th. I'm Gideon Resnick in for Shumita Basu. This is Apple News Today. DC's most powerful were gathered together at the Washington National Cathedral Tuesday for the funeral of Senator Lindsey Graham. It was a day that was marked by tributes, but also plenty of high-level diplomacy. President Trump eulogized Graham, noting how close they eventually became.
He was a man who gave America the full measure of his good and mighty heart until that heart itself just gave out. But even though Lindsey's life was cut short while he was still so full of vim and vigor, there can be no doubt that he lived absolutely to the fullest. He died doing the work he was born to do. He was truly a great politician, serving the country he loved to serve so deeply.
The funeral brought global leaders to pay tribute, and that provided an unusual opening for talks on two ongoing conflicts in the Gulf and Ukraine. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu met Trump in a closed-door meeting before the service began, and at a time when it's not exactly clear how Netanyahu is influencing the Iran war.
They've had this love-hate relationship for a long time. I've had people close to Trump just say it's just a bizarre relationship, and it makes less and less sense the closer you are in some respects.
Graham Slattery is White House national security reporter for Reuters. He notes they began the war side by side, with Trump regarding Netanyahu as a close ally.
But he's also been very frustrated in recent times, for instance, by some of Israel's bombing campaigns in southern Lebanon. So that's the macro. And then specifically, he's complained a bit recently about Prime Minister Netanyahu publicly making the case for strikes on Pickaxe Mountain, which is this alleged Iranian nuclear facility, rather than to him privately, perhaps in an effort to box him in the court of public opinion.
Slattery says Netanyahu may be trying to keep the U.S. involved in the conflict, even if Israel's more ambitious goals, like regime change, have fallen away a little.
I think for more obtainable goals, a major strike of some kind, Pickaxe Mountain, the place I keep bringing up, is something the Israelis would really like. This is a place that is a very, very deep cavern that is perhaps not penetrable by conventional weapons. So destroying this facility would take just a lot of effort. And it's not even clear that there's actually spinning centrifuges in there.
Netanyahu described the meeting as excellent. Trump's other meeting of the day was with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, another leader that he's had a complicated relationship with. They met privately on warmer terms than previous meetings and reportedly discussed support for Ukraine's air defenses and the possibility of reviving talks. It was perhaps no surprise that foreign policy would become an important part of the day. Graham was committed to the idea that the U.S. should shape world events and exert power abroad.
Senator Graham, he was really an old school hawk. Trump said something to the effect of, Lindsey, he never saw a war he didn't like. And so he was a pretty powerful advocate for just being more involved in, I mean, most conflicts, but particularly in Ukraine and Iran. So with his death, the hawk, so to speak, the old school neoconservatives really lost an important voice who had access to Trump and was actually one of relatively few people that could actually sway his decision making. So if you're Ukraine, if you're the Iranian opposition, you're probably a bit concerned.
Trump may have more diplomacy in the cards in the days ahead. Last night, the U.S. and Iran ended their brief pause in fighting. The U.S. military said it intercepted multiple Iranian ballistic missiles aimed on American forces, while U.S. and Saudi forces struck Iran-backed militias in Iraq. As the midterm campaign season approaches, Republican pollsters and strategists are sounding the alarm about a lack of enthusiasm among the GOP's voter base.
They think there is a problem where even very engaged, loyal voters, a chunk of them, are feeling disengaged and tuned out.
Liz Goodwin is a national political reporter for The Washington Post. She said that political operatives at the Republican-aligned Americans for Prosperity Action Group told her their door knockers are hearing that some dyed-in-the-wool Republicans are checked out ahead of November.
These are people who turned out 4 out of the last 4 elections, including primaries. That's like a really engaged voter. And about 1 in, out of every 5 of them that they would reach at the door would sort of say, you know, I'm not sure if I'm going to show up in November. I'm not really feeling it.
Historically, most parties that hold the White House see a slip in enthusiasm during midterm elections. And the president's party also typically loses ground in Congress during the midterms. Goodwin said the chief reason these voters are becoming disillusioned with Republicans is the economy and what they see as unfulfilled promises made by President Trump.
They're saying prices are too high. They don't like the gas hikes that have come since the Iran war, especially. Now that Trump is in there and they're still not seeing an improvement, in some cases, things are getting worse. A lot of voters are, it's about 20% of these kind of loyal Republican voters are citing this as a big issue for them.
Trump remains popular among his base, and he's shown an ability to turn out lower propensity voters when he is on the ballot. But polling backs up the idea that even some Republicans are feeling the economic pinch. A recent survey from Pew Research Center found that 41% of Republicans and Republican-leaning independents rated the economy as good or excellent. That's a drop from earlier in the year. And in terms of preference, another survey from Fox News found that respondents favored Democrats to Republicans on the economy and inflation by about 10 points apiece. The president projected an optimistic picture in Michigan this week and dismissed voter concerns over affordability.
Jobs are up. Inflation is down. Our border is secure. Factories are opening at record levels. Investment is booming. Michigan is thriving. America is winning like never before.
Goodwin said Republicans are hoping a planned midterm convention in September can get the party base tuned in to close that enthusiasm gap. But messaging alone may not be enough to change the minds of voters who cast their ballots with their wallets.
They're hoping that Trump will go there. He'll give a big speech. Everyone will get excited again. I think the issue with that, though, is that that doesn't really affect the actual economic indicators that these voters are citing as the reason why they're not enthusiastic. And it is possible that these enthusiasm gaps will narrow by November because a lot of people sort of tune in later and then put their jerseys back on and go vote on the side that they've always voted for. And that could well happen again. But the numbers are different enough from what we've seen in recent cycles that some Republicans are concerned that that's not going to happen.
The child population in big cities is falling dramatically. That's according to new data analysis by the Wall Street Journal, which showed the number of children under 5 living in larger cities has fallen 15% over the past decade.
And there are a variety of factors in this. The two main ones are people not having kids and then people with kids moving away.
Rachel Ensign is a reporter with the Journal.
The fertility rate or the birth rate is down actually more in cities than in other places. And then in a lot of cities, more people are leaving with kids. Some it's for cost reasons. It can also be a quality of life thing and also more economic opportunities available outside of cities with remote work. You don't have to stay in a city in the way that you once did.
She told us about the Escobedo family in El Paso, Texas. Their twins have moved on to college, so it's just them and their 12-year-old.
They live in this nice neighborhood in the city. They still live there, but they've just noticed that the number of kids around is disappearing. They live on this nice cul-de-sac. There used to be kids everywhere.
The Journal reviewed census data from 2015 through 2024, the most recent year available. They found that there are fewer children in around 2/3 of the 38 U.S. cities with more than 500,000 residents. The decline in city kids began in 2017 and picked up with the pandemic, fueled in part by the ability to work remotely. The drop is taking place in cities across the economic spectrum.
People are leaving all kinds of cities. So they're leaving expensive cities. They are leaving pretty cheap cities like Albuquerque or Milwaukee.
The exception to that trend seems to be some Sunbelt cities where families can still purchase a single-family home. Places like Fort Worth, Texas, and Jacksonville, Florida. Speaking to the Journal, some families cited costs, safety, and quality of life to justify the moves. Others without children pointed to the steep costs associated with having a family, swaying their decision to not have kids. Many economists worry that over time, an aging population could become a drag on economic growth and productivity rates as the working age population drops. But Ensign says that has not been the experience for big cities in the short term.
There are a lot of, or a number of cities at least, where families are effectively being replaced by affluent people without children or whose kids are grown up. And in that situation, it's not really that bad, at least for now, for the city's finances, essentially.
Here are a few other stories we're following today. Rescuers in Japan were working overnight to recover people after a 7.1 magnitude earthquake hit the Kumamoto Prefecture on Tuesday. At least 18 people died, the quake caused an explosion at a shopping mall, and knocked out power for thousands of homes. A massive earthquake in the same region 10 years ago killed 275 people and injured many more. Japan accounts for about 20% of the world's earthquakes of magnitude 6.0 or more. Johnson & Johnson said Monday that it would pay an estimated $5.5 billion in settlement money to resolve tens of thousands of lawsuits alleging that the company's baby powder and other talc products cause ovarian cancer. The deal has to be accepted by 95% of the individual claimants in state or federal court before it becomes final. The company denies that its talc-based products cause cancer, but stopped selling the baby powder in the U.S. and Canada in 2020. And finally, it's 5 o'clock somewhere, including at the retirement home. A new law in Minnesota will allow these facilities to serve alcohol without needing an additional license. That's thanks to the efforts of one 82-year-old resident named Anita LeBrun. She was a regular at happy hours at her retirement home, but said she found it ridiculous that they wouldn't serve her a glass of Pinot Grigio to have with her friends. She even testified to state lawmakers.
My friends and I love happy hour, just like many of you do, I am sure. Over a shared drink, we get to reminisce about parts of our life, military service, raising a family, the loss of a friend, and celebrating the golden phase of our lives, too.
The video of her testimony generated a ton of attention, and eventually the state's governor, Tim Walz, signed the bill into law earlier this month at LeBrun's home. They raised glasses to cheer, but there was one catch about what they actually drank. It was alcohol-free wine. That's because the law doesn't take effect until August 1st. You can find all these stories and more in the Apple News app. And if you're already listening to the news app right now, we've got a narrated article coming up next. The New Yorker has the story of a man who made it his life's mission to repair steel guardrails on American highways and raise awareness about their potential deadliness. If you're listening to the podcast app, you can follow Apple News Plus Narrated to find that story, and I'll be back with the news tomorrow.